they say the earth is heating up. But we at Burger King think that's baloney. Introducing the new BK Angry Earth Burger, a flame broiled whopper topped with fresh sliced bologna and sprayed with gravy from an aerosol can and served in a hazardously toxic styrofoam box.
Hey, that's reckless and damaging to the environment.
With a carbon footprint 5 times the size of our regular whopper, you'll agree. If the world is heating up, it's probably because of the flame broiled Angry Earth Burger.
I'm Al Gore, and the inconvenient truth is, it's yummy.
The new BK Angry Earth Burger, as irresponsible as it is delicious.
It's yummy.
Sure, other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to LATalkRadio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Bacon-Eating Fool.
Mr. Bacon-Eating Fool.
Some say it's just for breakfast. Oh, no, no, no. You know that any time is the right time to fry, microwave, or throw a heaping helping in the oven. Oh, connoisseur of sliced swine.
Cure that hunger with pure pork belly.
That's not bacon. It's bacon on bacon.
And it needs a little more bacon.
So the next time you crave a four-seam plateful of bacon brittle, a bacon-wrapped filet, bacon-covered pizza, chocolate-covered bacon, or a bucket of bacon bits, we'll tip our pork pie hat to you, Mr. Bacon-Eating Fool, a real American hero.
Mr. Bacon-Eating Fool.
You don't just eat bacon. You let it melt in your mouth like meaty candy.
For the best morning show on any kind of radio. Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio. Get ready for Sam and Kara in the morning. Give Sam and Kara a call at 323-203-0815. And now, here are your hosts, Sam and Kara.
Good morning, Kara, and welcome to Friday, April 2nd.
Good morning, Sam. You can't be mad at me. You want to know why?
What?
You can't be mad at me for being like a minute late. You know?
Why?
Well,
a minute late?
Yeah.
No, you should be here 10 minutes before the show.
I know. I normally I'm kind of there, but...
Turn the mic a little towards you there. You see how... Not this way. Like this way.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Like flipping.
Yeah,
like
the other... No. The other way. There you go.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. I should have checked that before.
No, listen.
Yes.
Because guess what today is?
What's today?
Today's Good Friday. Right. It's gonna be good.
Is it gonna be good? Did you go to church?
No. I mean, I just freaking woke up. Are you kidding? I had to get some coffee. I haven't had coffee in a week.
Oh, I thought you were gonna tell me. Well, I went to church, so don't get mad at me.
Oh yeah, I went to church, Sam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But no, I was I've been so out of it. I haven't even been plugged into the whole get ready for Easter.
Right.
Until. My friends are like, what are you doing this weekend? I don't know. Oh, yeah, it's Easter. Mm-hmm. I felt like a bad Christian. But
you should.
I should. Yeah. No, there's no room for that.
No?
There's what's the point? Guilt is a fruitless emotion.
Really?
It is.
Well, let me try and lay some on you and see how you deal with it. No, but I never said anything about you being late, and I think maybe that's why you keep on being late, you know, because I don't say anything.
Your clock is a little fast.
Excuse me, we've got a million clocks here. And besides, no one says that you have to get here right at 9 o'clock. It's
no,
okay
I know.
To get here 5-10 minutes before.
I do.
Yeah.
I do sometimes.
No, you don't. I can't remember the last time you did.
I do, but you know, this has been a rough week.
Oh, okay. All
it's
right.
It's been a rough week.
Okay. Well, that's the thing, though. So if it's just this week, then I guess you don't have any more excuses.
No, I don't.
Okay.
But what about you, Mr.
No, I mean, look, people are waiting for a show to start. You know, I mean, you know, screw me, but there's other people waiting, so.
People are waiting? They're waiting?
Anyway, I won't run you through the ringer this morning, although I really feel like it.
I could tell.
But I have to come clean, you know?
You have to come clean. Get it off your chest.
Yeah, I mean, when I'm sitting here at 9:01 and I don't know if you'll show up or not.
I've always showed up.
No, you haven't.
What are you talking about?
I called you at 9:05 one day.
Oh, that one time. That one time.
And
I woke
you up.
That one time. That one time.
One time I
asked. No, one time you had to call me and my alarm didn't go off.
Oh, okay.
Remember that?
Yeah, but there's always a reason, my dear. You know, I'm sure there's always a reason.
Well, there are always reasons.
Anyway. So it is Good Friday, right? What does that mean to us non-Christians?
It means that this is the day that Christ went to the cross and was crucified, and I know it doesn't sound good, but it's the beginning of really taking sin and taking the bridge between man and God and taking it to the cross and crucifying it. So it's the end of an era where God is there and we're here.
Right.
It's the end of the time when, in order to approach God or be close to God, you have to do a bunch of ceremonies and sacrifice this and sacrifice that and slay this and go through five different priests to get to God. It's through this ultimate sacrifice that we have the ability through God, through Jesus's blood that's shed, to actually have intimacy with God, and there's no middleman. And there's no going through or doing something or tap dancing five times or saying prayers backwards three times or going through any ritual. Right. It's actually an invitation that we can invite God into our hearts and the Holy Spirit and have that one-on-one intimacy with the Lord and start to kind of walk, you know, hand in hand with God, as opposed to such a distance.
Right.
And
well, praise the Lord. Hallelujah.
I know. Hallelujah.
So is Easter the holiest holiday for Christians?
Well, I mean, it's up there. I don't really look at it like the holiest. It's just it's the crux of our faith is the crucifixion and the resurrection.
Right.
So it's kind of everything. I mean, but I'm trying to think what else. I mean, there's Christmas, which is the birth of Christ.
Right.
Which we're glad he was born, because we couldn't have Easter without the birth. But yeah, I mean, I'm not religious about it. When I say religious is kind of a verb to describe the fact that when you really do believe in God and you've accepted Jesus into your heart, it is very real. And, and through time, it becomes very personal and intimate, that you're not defined by those holidays anymore. I mean, they are monumental, but as far as going and punching your time card is not necessarily the way that it works. But no, I mean, it's real. It is defining, and it is time to reflect and really remember.
I see. So
but we should remember
every day.
Are you
going to go to church on Sunday, this Sunday?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go tonight too.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, to a Good Friday service. I mean, I forgot, like, all the roads were, the traffic wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
And I was
is that because of that?
Mm-hmm. A lot
I
of people
see.
Aren't working today.
Oh, I see. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's why TJ didn't come in this morning. He said he was going to church.
Oh,
so,
I guess in the morning, huh?
See, you're not a good Christian. It's your Good Friday, but not a good Christian.
What are you talking about?
No, I'm kidding.
I
would never say that to you.
I know. I know you're playing.
You're probably one of the most genuine Christians I've ever met.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm a Christian that lets it all hang out.
Yeah, there you go.
No, we had a Bible study last night at my house. I've started going to one, and they couldn't have it at their place they normally did. So we hosted it last night, and it was really good. It's interesting to have Bible studies. I mean, obviously you're studying the Bible, but it's a cross section of so many different types of people, different, obviously genders and that's a given, but different socioeconomic backgrounds, different personalities. It's not people that you would naturally meet or gravitate to in friendship, but then you develop these friendships, which is pretty cool.
Right.
Because it's people that I've got a certain personality type, and my friends, there's just a certain kind of, I don't even know. I mean, I have a pretty diverse group of friends. But what I'm saying is, in these groups, it kind of brings you into contact with people intimately that you wouldn't necessarily.
I see. And how many people were there?
It's about 10 of us.
10.
Yeah, about 10.
Is it people that you know? I mean, you know,
I've
all
met
of
a
them?
Few of them before.
I see.
And there was a lot, there was a few that were new last night. Uh-huh. I'm relatively new to the group, too.
Uh-huh.
We just, you know, we read through the scriptures and, you know, we talk about it. We discuss it. We go back and forth with it. We pray and we just get to know one another.
Yeah.
It's a time to kind of like really connect and fellowship and kind of just be healing for one another, you know?
Right.
Like, you know, you heard, like, originally when people refer to the church, in the Bible, they're not really talking about the building or the establishment or
right.
the organization. But Jesus talks about my church, my church, my church, and to take care of the church. And the church is actually the body of Christ. So it's the people, it's the believers. And so when people say, they think that, I mean, I believe going to church is essential and it's good, but it's not going to save you in and of itself.
Right.
It's really the community of believers that when believers get together and truly, genuinely, and authentically connect
right.
and worship God and just fellowship and just hang out. I mean,
right.
there's a loving, I mean, God shows up, there's just a loving experience that can happen. And I find a lot more of my spiritual growth happens in communities like Bible studies or even just in my Christian friendships versus
right.
going to church.
Right.
Because it's so big and you can be anonymous and there's something about going and corporately worshiping God, but it doesn't substitute for that super intimacy that you need one-on-one and then
right.
with kind of believers.
Right. Let me ask you this question, because I know in the Old Testament, in the Torah, God says he bans using images of people.
Okay, go on.
Right?
He's talking about
that's
images.
Why when you go to synagogues, there's no pictures of people at
mm-hmm.
all. And because I think he feared that people would actually worship people
mm-hmm.
rather than God. And my question is then, how is it that the church, the Christian religion, has those images all over the place?
Well, I think that there's several different scriptures that talk about holy graven images as well.
Right.
Like making... I think the point of it was, again, going back to the context and stuff, and especially the Old Testament, is that the whole Old Testament is a real love story between Israel and God. And God loves obviously more people than just Israel, but it's symbolic of how Israel got, basically God said, I found you basically in a field and you were abandoned and you're like a baby that was just born with no mother and you were bloody and you were not fed and you were basically dying basically and you were abandoned and God had mercy on you and through that redeemed this child and grew up this child and nursed this child and loved this child and then when the child was of age, she'll say to be married or whatever, it's a love story of how Israel would leave God so many times and God would madly and romantically and would go after Israel to redeem her. And it's a back and forth and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And many times throughout the Old Testament and the Torah, Israel would constantly worship false gods or worship idols, would worship man-made images. Like
right.
like they would build a calf and uh-huh. worship it. They would build, and it had to do with outside influences. It also had to do with the fact that it says, part of the reason why in the Old Testament they would read through the law and they would read through what God had already done about, you know, Moses and parting the Red Sea and the what you guys call Passover, was to remind them of the works of the Lord, because as humans, we have to remember God's faithfulness and his goodness. And when we don't remember that, we're so quickly to go to what we can see. And I could see a calf. I could see an image here that I've made. And forget the fact that I've made it from my own two damn hands.
Right.
I'm going to turn my faith and focus on this thing and superimpose what I want it to be. And God kept saying to the people, don't make images.
Right.
Don't make images, because their hearts were easily led astray to worship and fixate on things that they can see, but they're dead. These things are dead. They're not living.
Right.
And I think that that's where it came from. And that's the context of which it was, to really instill faith and focus on the true living God who isn't seen by the eye.
Right. So they don't worship people, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's also the reason why Moses when he died, when he chose his place to die, he didn't want anybody to know where it was so people wouldn't worship him.
Yeah.
And my question is going back, though, that was a long answer and you still didn't answer my question. And that is, how can Christianity then, except in the Old Testament, allow itself to worship actually someone who was a person and have pictures of him and apostles and and Virgin Mary and all that all over
well,
the church?
Well, that's a really wide, that's a very spread, like you're talking a little bit about Catholicism, which I don't agree with. But right. you're also talking about Christianity. So going back to the crux of what you said with, like, Jesus, we believe that Jesus is the Messiah.
Right.
Now, one thing that Christianity and Judaism can agree with is that we believe there is a Messiah, a Redeemer.
Right.
Okay. The Jewish people don't agree that it's Jesus,
right.
and they're still waiting for him to return.
Okay.
The Christians believe that it was Jesus and
right.
that he is the Messiah. So we worship him, but we look at God as one God, but three persons, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. God basically is one. So when we're worshiping Jesus, it's not really just Jesus. We're worshiping God and the Spirit, and we look at it as one God. We're
right.
not worshiping man. God was God came down off his throne through the body of Christ and walked on this earth as an example for you and I and to redeem us and to save us,
right.
and that was the physical side
so
of God.
So this nullifies what God has said before?
I'm sorry, what do you mean?
God said before, do not use graven images or, it specifically says, not to put any human images in a place of worship or anywhere else.
Well, I think what he's saying is don't worship an image, but Jesus isn't an image.
Why?
Well, I mean,
that's only according to your belief.
Well,
I'm explaining that
having a painting, a physical painting is dead, right?
Right.
It's made out of two hands. It's a, it hangs on a wall.
Yeah.
You can't worship it. It's not alive. It's not living. And it's not God.
Well, but you guys, regularly do this. That's why I don't understand.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Like sculptures and...
I think you're talking more about Catholicism and you're talking...
I don't know. I mean, that's the Christianity that I see. What other kind of Christianity? Are you like a Protestant or something? Is that...
I guess technically if you divide Christianity into Catholicism and then anything that's not Catholicism is Protestant, well then yes, but I don't identify myself with a denomination. I'm non-denominational.
Right. Okay.
Which means I read the Bible, I pray, right. and I do other studies out there that supplement it and go to church, but at the same time, I am learning and I'm interpreting and I'm not having other people tell me exactly what to believe.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It does, but you're not answering my question.
But I think what you're talking about is Catholicism has an element to where they believe in saints.
Right.
Which, like in the Bible, there's the 12 disciples. Well, they've become saints.
Right.
And then they also have supplemental reading and books where they talk about all these different prayers to the saints. Now, my thing is I believe in the Bible.
Right.
And I don't believe praying to saints is supported or even biblically accurate. So right. I don't agree with praying to anyone other than God.
Right.
Really.
Is there a church you've been to that there is no picture or images of Jesus Christ?
Possibly. I don't even notice it because I think what the heart of what God was saying is, don't worship anything but me.
Right.
And I think that culture and that time, and maybe still today in some places, like maybe, and I'm saying this lightly because I don't know, maybe in some Catholic places people get fixed on the images.
Right.
It's to remove that because these aren't to be gods. No one's God except for God, right? One true living God.
Right.
And I think that to have a picture of Christ doesn't mean you're going to worship Christ. To have a symbol or some image of God, and it doesn't mean you're going to worship God. But maybe in certain cultural climates or in certain arenas, people would get fixated on it and turn it into God itself.
Right.
So for me, if I walk into a church and there's a picture of Jesus, I'm not going to worship the picture.
Right.
That's a picture made by human hands.
Right.
Jesus is alive and living.
Of someone that they admire greatly.
Sure.
Okay.
And I don't have a
All
problem
right.
with that.
Well, I rest my point.
no, I don't know what your point is, actually.
Okay,
but...
well, my point is that, You know, the Bible says one thing, and I'm seeing a whole, an entire religion doing something else, you know.
Well, that's,
so maybe someone else can explain it to me. Go ahead and call in, you know, because...
Well, you're seeing a lot of people that take the Bible, and, I mean, that's exactly true, Sam. I mean, there's a lot of different sects of Christianity, and there's a lot of people that just take what they want from it, leave out parts, and they do what they want. And you're going to see a lot of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that happens in all religions, where people kind of take it and run with it and... don't really totally follow it, and you know, it confuses people like you that go, what the heck, what? I don't get it. Yeah, which is a true point. I mean, there's a lot of
people like you.
Well, no, I mean people like
no, it just sounded funny.
Yeah, but I mean people like anybody that you don't intimately read it, so right. or have the same experience. So you're looking at it going, I don't understand this, and you're looking at the whole religion going, what is this? And I'm just saying that's in so many areas beyond just what you're talking about, worshiping images,
right.
I'm saying there's so many other things on top of it that people do that aren't in the Bible,
right.
That are very confusing.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this also. You know that the prophet Samuel was also resurrected, right? And after he died. Now, my question is, how come he was not chosen as a quote-unquote son of God? I mean, how is it that it seems almost random that one person was picked and the thing is, Jesus did not start the religion. It's the people after him that started the religion. He was merely Jewish, and he was preaching whatever he was preaching. But, you know, it's my question is, why is it that, you know, if that is the point, if that is the...
I don't think that Samuel was resurrected.
He was resurrected.
I don't know what you're talking about, actually. The Old Testament?
Of course.
Samuel was the prophet, right?
Right.
Samuel the prophet. And you're saying he was resurrected.
Right. Yeah.
Are you... I don't think... No.
Take my word for it. I'll find it for you.
Yeah, find it for me.
Yeah, you can't tell me no. I mean, you can tell me, well, maybe you're not... you know, you don't remember correctly, but trust me, I've been through the Bible a few times.
Okay, well, let me know where it is, and just...
But it was condemned, you know. I mean, so I don't know. I mean, the thing is, this whole thing is very deep, very confusing, and very charged topic, you know. So
I don't have a problem
I'm not,
with talking
I'm not
about
here
it.
To criticize religions. I'm just asking.
I love it, Sam. You know, you need to understand, if you do criticize, I don't find it really offensive, to be honest. I think you're just asking. I mean, you're being honest. You're saying what you don't buy and what you do buy and what you believe.
Yeah, I didn't say I don't buy it. I'm just saying that I want some answers. You
know? And I think that's...
And sometimes it just seems like, you know, there's a lot of questions about Christianity. And, you know, then again, about Judaism as well. You know, I mean, there's many things that I simply don't understand, you know, that I question as well. But but the bottom line is not to go with... I don't think you should go with blind faith. I think you should question. I think you should be skeptical. I think you should inquire, you know, and not just go based on blind faith. But then blind faith is what religion is all about. You know,
I think
it doesn't
it's
have
both.
To do with reason, you know.
Well, I mean, God gave you a brain, right? He gave you a brain, and he gave you the ability to do critical thinking, right?
Right.
And I don't think he asks you to check your brain at the door.
Right?
I don't think he wants you to be an ignorant, quote-unquote, Christian or ignorant Jew or whatever. I don't think he's asking you to just drink the Kool-Aid. I think he wants your heart. And I think in order to do that, and everybody's different, but I do think asking questions and digging for yourself is good. It's not necessarily saying you're never going to believe or you're not going to be convinced or whatever, or it's not going to be real for you. It's, you're just saying you want to know. You want to know. And I don't think that is wrong.
Right.
And I think that the blind faith element is that you're going to find information up until a point, and you're going to find more, and then you're going to find more, and you're going to find more. But at the end of the day, do you see God in front of your face like you see me? You don't, right?
Right.
So there's going to be an element if you decide to give your whole life and heart and your mind and seek after God and believe. There's going to be times when you don't feel it.
Right.
There's going to be times definitely when you don't see it.
Yeah.
And that's what faith is about. It's not to make you a robot. It's not to be like, you know, just repeat after me and do what I say. It's for it to be real in Sam's heart or in Kara's heart.
Right.
And it's personal. So there is an element of that, but it's not to just, you know, blind faith. Oh, I believe I'm just going to...
Yeah, well, let me ask you this. Was it or was it not blind faith when Abraham agreed to sacrifice his son? Okay, yes, it was hard for him and everything, mm-hmm. but he believed that God asked him to do it.
Yeah.
And he did it.
Yeah.
You know? And my question is, if you saw somebody today doing the same thing and giving you that excuse, nobody would buy it.
Yeah, that's true.
So why are we buying it now? Why were we buying it back then? And why, you know, why is Abraham given that benefit of a doubt, mm-hmm. you know, but someone else wouldn't?
Yeah, I know what you
that's
mean.
Blind faith, you know? And
yeah.
the thing is that I think blind faith can be dangerous because you're not really thinking logically. You're going based on what you're told, what you think is happening, and mm-hmm. so forth, you know?
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. I do agree with you. What some cool parts about that story, though, is that Abraham knew the character of God. Abraham trusted in God's character, and we know that from the Bible that God's character is unchanging. He's faithful, he's good, and then all the different attributes of God, they're unchanging. And so when God said...
I beg to differ. I mean, I think there's so many different sides to God in the Bible.
There are.
You know, jealous, you know, vengeful. I mean, there's a lot of that there too as well, you know?
But if you got to study what that means. Like when God... Let me just point out real quick with Abraham. When he said, go and sacrifice Isaac... The interesting part is that Abraham was intimate with God in spirit. He had an intimate knowledge of the Lord. And so in the Old Testament, he talks to Isaac, and as he's taking him up to, I forgot the name of it, where they were going to go sacrifice the offering, he tells the guy that goes with them, the guide or the guy that's driving the donkey or whatever, he says, wait here. We're going to go up there and worship, and we'll be back. He says, we will be back.
Right.
And there's something in saying that we'll be back. It was faith. He didn't know for sure, but it was faith because he knew the character of God, that he was asked to do his part, but he knew that God's character would not let him do this. He believed it in his heart that this wasn't going to happen. Not that he wasn't willing to do it, but that he knew God's character would restore in some way. And then when they're walking up, he said that God, that the son Isaac goes, well, what are we going to sacrifice? Where's the offering?
Right.
He goes, God will provide an offering.
Right.
And that's another very monumental statement, because what he's saying, again, is going back to knowing God's character, that God's going to provide the offering. Even though he's told to sacrifice his son, God's going to take care of this. And then they saw...
blind faith again.
Well, yeah, I mean, okay. it is faith,
right,
but it's
so...
my point is it's not like he was just a droid that was like, I must kill my son, give me a knife.
I don't know. I don't know.
He lamented and he did it, and he put Isaac down. But there's all these context clues that show that he wasn't just doing it, although he did attempt to do it before he was stopped. It shows that he was hoping and trusting in the character of God. And then and you see that God did provide, I think it was like a ram that was there, or there was like an elk or something. There's some kind of animal there that God provided for them to offer as the sacrifice.
Right.
And they did return back to the guy. So I totally get what you're saying. And it could look like he's a crazy man, and it could look like, you know, he'd be condemned. But there's something in the scriptures that suggests Abraham's real full trust in God's character. And we know God's character wasn't to sacrifice Isaac, because that's not the way God works. He doesn't sacrifice. He's not like sacrifice your kid.
Yeah.
It was about taking the dreams that God has given you and saying, here, God, I'm giving them back to you. You do what you want with them.
Well, but this was a test, right?
Yeah, it was.
Okay. All right. Anyway, so we're going to change the topic now. We're going to go into food and obesity. And,
is this that called The Hunger Within?
The Hunger Within. How did you know about that?
Because we were supposed to have her on a while ago.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Remember?
That's right. That's right. That's why the website was still on the browser here. I was wondering, when did we go there? So that's true. You have a great memory,
I do.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to call. Let me just bring this up here. And her name is Marilyn Migliori, I think. So we're going to find out right away what the name is. And she wrote a book called The Hunger Within. There's a website to go with that. So we're going to find out all about it. Marilyn or Marilyn Ann?
Hello?
Yes, good morning, Marilyn. This is Sam and Kara calling you from L.A.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
We're fine. Where are we calling you? What part of the country are you in?
Actually, I'm back in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Oh, you're in Michigan. I see.
I like the accent. I love the Ann Arbor, Michigan accent.
I didn't realize I had an accent.
Well, it's just a little one, but it's super sweet. I love it.
Yeah, we pick up accents all the time because we talk to so many people. And now, Marilyn, your last name is Migliori. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, that's
it. Okay, wonderful. You're a nutritionist and a psychotherapist, and you founded and wrote a book called The Hunger Within. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
Yes. Actually, I was working as a nutritionist first, and I found that with many of my patients, irregardless of the amount of nutrition information I was providing, they still seemed to be struggling, and I recognized there was something else going on that had nothing at all to do with nutrition information and or exercise that was ultimately driving their eating behaviors.
Right.
And so I actually went back to school here at the University of Michigan, and I really focused my study and my training in working with looking at the psychological aspects of eating, and interned at the eating disorders program and unit here at the University of Michigan to gain a clear understanding of those psychological forces that drive eating. And that at that point, I then started conducting and developing the workshops to help people address these forces that drive eating, and then also then created the workbook, which basically replicates the course of treatment that I'm conducting at the University of Michigan now.
Right. Now, I know there's what they call an obesity crisis in the country. Do you think that people are more overweight now than they used to be, or is it just that we're putting more emphasis on it now?
Well, I think there is more of an emphasis on it, but I think that the crisis is definitely alive and well. And I think that we've been focusing so much our attention on treating the symptoms rather than really looking at the underlying causes that drive this obesity epidemic.
Right.
And this type of eating behavior.
Okay. So you're saying that many people, although some people probably are overweight just because they love to eat, but you're saying that many people are overweight because they're having eating issues and disorders.
Yeah. I mean, all of our behaviors, Sam, every behavior that we engage in is actually propelled and pushed by an inner story that's going on inside of us. You know, we all have experienced early things in our lives, verbal and nonverbal messages and things that we experience that shapes the person we are today. And the same holds true with our relationship with food. And these eating behaviors, not unlike all of our behaviors, are just a snapshot of an unconscious story that keeps playing over and over and over in our heads. And
right.
If we never stop to examine this inner world that we live in, that ultimately drives all of our behaviors, we really become the human equivalent of the GPS devices we see equipped in our cars today, where we just find ourselves following the same old patterns over and over and over again, and also find ourselves crash landing in the same old way.
Right.
So what this really does is, rather than treating the symptoms like diet and exercise and increasing physical activity and placing taxes on certain food items, it really helps to take a closer look at what's driving the behaviors to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I do with both my workshops and the Hunger Within workbook.
Let me ask you, I have some friends that have struggled a lot in this area, and I've always wondered, too, when people just, like you said, just address the obesity or the weight loss or the nutrition, that it's not holistic. And
correct.
And I've seen that, like, with The Biggest Loser, which I love the show, and I think that sometimes when you do change the outside, it can help to change the inside, too. But I've seen, you know, I think it's why people relapse, if you will, because because the issues that are driving them to want to self-medicate in this way or check out, you know, those things haven't been addressed. And I've even had friends, had a close friend of mine who lost, I was telling the girl that went from size 2 to, you know, size, you know, 250 back and forth, uh-huh. that she said, she goes, I wasn't prepared to even lose the weight. So she lost over 100 pounds and became the hot girl and was like, I don't want this.
Really?
She just, it was just too, she wasn't ready for that, to be exposed like that and to have that attention and to have, to deal with that kind of responsibility and to actually be noticed and to be, people go to her and look to her for answers and ways, and that it just kind of brought on its own issues. And so she kind of, in some ways, regained the weight. And it's not really my story to tell, but I've just seen that with a lot of people too, that it there's just so much of it's just not about, hey, put the cookie down. It's so,
right.
It's so internal.
Deeper than that.
Yes, you're so right, Kara. And, you know, this young lady that you're speaking about, you know, she didn't realize until she lost the weight that she was using her weight to really protect herself.
Right.
It kept her invisible. And so she reverted back to that place that felt safe to her.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the piece that doesn't get addressed. You're absolutely right. It's the missing link, and it's also the missing link in The Biggest Loser.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the focus is so much on the diet and exercise piece, but very little is focusing on these underlying forces that drive these behaviors. And many people, you know, may attain their goal late. In fact, I work with patients here at the University of Michigan that have had the bariatric surgery, the gastric bypass surgery,
yeah.
and of course they're going to lose their weight because
right.
their intake is limited so much, just physically they're limited on how much they can consume, so they'll get down to their goal weight. But what they're finding with this particular population is that they then start to swap compulsions, and they'll start taking on another type of compulsive behavior. Because what they never did is they never got in there and treated what was driving the compulsion to begin with.
Right.
And that's what you'll see people doing, is they'll just switch from one compulsive behavior to another. I've had so many people come in and see me that quit drinking and they gain 50 pounds.
Right.
And then they'll say, you know, I'm doing the same thing with food that I used to do with my drinking, where now I'm a closet eater and I feel that same sense of out of control and shame and powerlessness that I felt over alcohol. I'm just doing it now with food.
Right.
And so if you never get in there and address that generator that drives the behavior, you'll just see the person switching from one thing to another. So you're not really treating the cause and the root cause. You just keep treating the symptoms.
I've also have noticed, too, because, again, I have some friends that I'm getting to see up close and personal, that people, it's like I look at it, too, as a synonym would be bondage, and that to be free in one area, some people will then just become in bondage in another area. And I think the overemphasis on what you eat is such a temporary fix to the bigger issue. And what I've noticed is, and I've never been obese or anything, but I mean, even in my own weight, is when I've overly focused on my nutrition and exercise, it becomes obsessive. And then now I'm afraid of what I eat, and now I don't have peace. I'm focused on the food so much that it's like you're not really free either way. You just either you're in bondage to the food in one way, where you're just overindulging and you're, like you said, closeted shame and all that, or you're in bondage, because I think a lot of people that are even really super quote unquote healthy, sometimes they're in bondage to their exercise, they're in bondage to their food as well. But on the other end,
you're absolutely right, Kara. And you do feel on some level stuck or trapped. And this is when I mentioned earlier, watch that behavior, that obsessive compulsive pattern, because it is just a snapshot of an unconscious story that's going on inside of a person's head. And so all of our behaviors are ultimately telling us a story. What we need to do is go go behind the story, go behind the behavior, and uncover the story that's being expressed through the behavior. And that's why you're right. A person can go from what's considered a healthy compulsion, like maybe exercise,
yeah,
but then it seems to just completely occupy their entire life.
Yeah.
Everything is focused around the exercise. They're obsessing about the exercise. And then they'll move from that compulsion into another, but they're still stuck in that same old script.
Right.
And that's the piece. That script is the piece that's driving all of those obsessive compulsive behavior patterns. Mm.
Right. So now you're saying that many people that are obese are actually trying to hide themselves behind all that weight, trying to protect
themselves.
For many
people, that weight is serving a function for them. Their body size in and of itself is serving a function for them. And the person that Kara described is a really interesting example, and it's one that I see frequently with my patients, where they don't recognize that for them, their body weight and size is actually a vehicle they use to protect themselves and mm-hmm. render themselves invisible from the world around them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important that they recognize that piece, because that is something, that's a dynamic that's being expressed in their outward appearance. And oftentimes when they lose that shield, that protective device, they feel very exposed, very vulnerable. And oftentimes they'll revert back and regain the weight they lost initially.
Right.
In an unconscious attempt to feel that element of safety mm-hmm. again.
It
yeah,
is like
it's a common phenomenon.
Isn't it kind of like a sense of safety that the weight is sometimes?
Yes, and for many people, they've done a lot of research, and they have found that many people who grapple with obesity, somewhere along the line, when they were earlier in their life, their boundaries were invaded,
right.
Either emotionally, physically, or sexually.
Right.
And so they start to create and build this wall around themselves to protect themselves from the world around them.
Right.
It becomes sort of an unconscious way of protecting oneself. And a lot of people don't recognize that piece, and that's a very important piece to take a look at and begin to examine and treat.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely read in a couple places that many women that have eating disorders did experience some kind of sexual abuse early on in their lives, and then they try to be unattractive so they don't attract that kind of danger again, or trying to hide, like Marilyn is saying, you know, try to protect themselves somehow. Yeah,
it's a common phenomenon, a very common phenomenon.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And that's something again that doesn't really get addressed in programs like The Biggest Loser. They don't look at that piece, and that's like the most important element, because that's what's driving their eating behaviors to begin with.
Right.
Yeah.
And oftentimes it renders people feeling even more frustrated when all you do is treat the symptoms, because they find themselves so focused on the symptoms, then they get to the point where they slip or they relapse, and then they continue to feel that sense of powerlessness again and that sense of failure, and it just feeds that internal script. It reinforces and validates that internal script. And so in many ways, it's actually counterproductive to be focusing on treating the symptoms without treating the cause.
Right.
Can I ask you, not to be too controversial, although I love it, again, going back to some experiences I've had with some of my friends, is that my heart goes out. My heart really does break for anybody, whatever the addiction is when it goes back to the addiction, if we want to call it an addiction, but the vice or the bondage and not the root, because it is because it is frustrating. It's its own cycle. It's its own bondage. But my question is, I've seen my friends go through like the 12 step for Overeaters Anonymous. And have some success temporarily and then again relapse, and you know, not to measure the program by the results, but I also do wonder though, because based on what I know about the program, in my opinion, it's still just treating, basically it's encouraging abstinence and trying to help people to kind of render the you know, to kind of give it up, and not to dog it, but my question is do you have any thoughts on that approach, or do you find that to be, you know, advantageous or not?
Well, I think the 12-step program is therapeutic in the fact that it does provide a supportive environment for people. My problem with the 12-step program is I think it really disempowers people.
I think so,
because
too.
It tells you, ultimately, one of the steps is to say that you are powerless over whatever it is, whether it's alcohol or food. And my approach is really about empowering people, not disempowering people.
Right.
And the other thing, really the heart of all addictions, is this internal script that I'm talking about, this unconscious story. That's the heart of the addiction.
Mm.
And again, the 12-step programs is just ultimately treating the symptoms. It's creating a therapeutic supportive environment, which I think is very therapeutic. But what it doesn't do is it doesn't get to the heart of the problem.
Mm.
And it is. It's about abstinence and, in many ways, disempowering people instead of empowering them and getting it treating that what the heart of what's driving their behaviors to begin with.
Right.
Yeah.
Which leads to your program, which is called The Hunger Within. Can you tell us a little bit about the program itself?
Yes, the program that I conduct right now at the University of Michigan Medical Center is a 12-week workshop. And I've had so many people, and once I started conducting the workshops, and I began conducting them actually in New York, and I was given the opportunity to actually take the content from the workshops and put them into a workbook format. So my workbook that I now have available is basically replicates the course of treatment that I use in my workshops. So somebody could just go through the workbook, follow the characters in the book. There's actually little individual writing exercises in the back of each chapter, and it helps them to actually ultimately become their own therapist. It gives them directives of how to go in there and start to pull out and uncover the story, and ultimately how to go ahead and begin to treat themselves. Become first, examine the story, become aware of it. That's the first step, is be able to examine and discover this internal story that drives their behaviors, and then how to actually go in there and rewrite the script.
Right. Well, mm-hmm. That sounds, there's just so much to it. You know, it's not a simple thing at all, you know. And I know people go on diets all the time and are unsuccessful. And, just from what's seeing around me is that people really, losing weight is one of the hardest things for people to do.
Yes, it is. And, we're surrounded with food and bombarded with food, and we use food for so many reasons. And, all this early script and this relationship we form with food started very early in life. And when we wrote these unconscious scripts that I keep referring to, we wrote them when we were children. Mm-hmm. So they were written through the eyes and the prism and the perspective of a child. But now, as adults, we can take a closer look at this old script and recognize that on many levels it was rather irrationally based and somewhat illogical in many ways, because it was written through the eyes of a child. And when we're children, we are powerless. We are dependent on other people to meet our needs. So we then can take a different look at it and actually begin to rewrite the script by using more adult and rational effective strategies. So that's really what we're doing. We're pulling out this self-sabotaging inner dialogue, and we're rewriting it now with our more adult brain that we have access to that we didn't have available to us when we were little. So
right.
We were limited and vulnerable in many levels when we wrote these old scripts.
I think it's what's so interesting about what you're doing and powerful is that I feel like more people that even though don't even struggle in this department, I think it's important for people to hear this, because I Sam and I have talked about this before, just how, you live in a society that it's so visual and it's all about the way you look. And it's like you can have several different addictions. And I said, I feel like sometimes people would rather you be a cocaine addict with smeared mascara coming out of a club looking kind of heroin chic and glamorous than be obese. And I feel like Yeah. This dispels kind of like, they're not just this morbid fat person that's just a slob. It's like these are humans that are, this is the way that they've medicated or whatever, and it goes so much deeper than that. And I just think it kind of dispels the self-righteous attitude and can create compassion for people and kind of connecting people and to where they can empathize. Because I think people like to just categorize, you know, oh, you're fat, and that, you know, it's like, if for some reason people look at it like it's the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, because it's obvious. I mean, you can see it. You wear it on your sleeve almost, you know, and people can see that you're having a problem, you know, when someone does coke or drinks, kinda people don't really see it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you start to label people as not having any discipline or, you know, being weak or, and, you know, really, when you really take a close look at it, you know, we are living in a very toxic environment.
Mm-hmm.
We're being hit with all kinds of messages on how we're supposed to look and what we're supposed to be like, and we get all kinds of mixed messages. So imagine a little child trying to comprehend all of this, make sense of all of it with a limited ability to do so, and so they start creating and developing their own coping mechanisms to help them deal in this toxic environment. And for many people, when you take a look at their struggles with weight, it's really just their way of trying to cope in a world that's not a very easy world to live in, because we're constantly given messages that we're never good enough on many levels, and that's our society. Step away from just those early messages you get within your family system. But kids are being hit with messages within their culture and this society all the time. And it can be very toxic if you don't have a mechanism for going in there and detoxifying all these media messages on many levels that we're hit with on a daily basis.
That's true.
It's a struggle for people. And for many people, their food becomes a mechanism and their body weight becomes a mechanism for coping.
Right. Wow. Well, we're talking to Marilyn Ann Migliori, and the book is The Hunger Within. The website is thehungerwithin.com, and you guys can go and check out more. There's testimonials and the workshops and everything. Marilyn, thank you so much for your time, and definitely a wealth of information
that you
gave us. And
thank you.
Sure. Congratulations, and again, The Hunger Within, and all the best to you, Marilyn.
Thanks, Marilyn.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Kira and Sam.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good afternoon.
Whoops. Okay, sorry about
Sam
that.
Like cigarette
Sometimes
break.
You don't know when when people are going to finish saying goodbyes. But anyway, I didn't mean to hang
out. That was an interesting interview.
Yeah, it is, because I think it's so, you know, there's just so much of it going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it almost takes over people's lives. You know,
how are you feeling? Are you super tired still?
You can tell I'm still sick. I mean, I'm talking like shit. I gotta blow my nose and stuff, and I still cough.
Yeah,
and it's hard for me. It's really hard to do the show like this.
Did you get some good rest yesterday?
No, not really.
No. I'm looking at you. Look like you're hurting a bit.
I am. My eyes are like burning. I don't know what it is.
Do you need to go to a doctor?
No,
it's not like that.
So, no. Let's take a break and see what's going on.
Okay.
Okay, we're going to take a little break. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to LA Talk Radio Channel 1. Call in 903-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815.
Don't you hold it? Let's get back to Sam and Kara in the morning.
Kara in the morning.
Right here on LA Talk Radio.
Can't stand this hard rock so early in the morning.
Yeah, 8 a.m., 9 a.m., whatever time I'm supposed to be here. Sam, so, I'm sorry. I'll be here earlier.
Well, okay.
I will. Well, proof is in the pudding.
Yeah, well, that's what you said last time.
I did say that last time, but I forgot. Yeah. I'm saying it again.
Okay. Just, I have the answer for you. Just get up 5 or 10 minutes earlier. You'll be good.
Okay.
You know, continue the same routine. Just, you know. Look, I can't even talk. I've got this post-nasal drip now.
Yeah.
So, we decided we're going to cut the show short today so I don't have to keep exposing you to all this nasal voice. And that's too bad because earlier this week you didn't feel well and we had
to cut the show short. I know, it's been a rough week, huh?
Yeah, we've been sick, you know, and I don't know what it is. It's the second cold I've gotten in like 3 months and it stays with me for like 2 weeks, you know?
Go to the salt room.
So, yeah, yeah. Or maybe I just will go to the doctor and get antibiotics after 2 weeks of this because it worked last time.
It did?
You know, yeah. So, anyway, I see we have phone calls coming in. But at any rate, have a great weekend.
You have a wonderful weekend.
Okay,
everybody,
we're going to have great weather.
Happy Good Friday.
Happy Good Friday. Happy Easter.
Callers, call in another time, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, Monday.
Sounds good to me. And we're going to go get something to eat, and we'll be back here on Monday.
You have been listening to Sam and Kara in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 9 a.m. until 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, originating from the Los Angeles Talk Radio studios. If you have questions about the show or would like to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please direct all correspondence to info@latalkradio.com. Sam and Kara in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.